Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, February 28th, 2017. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll talk with Haley Duran, Emily Kane, and Todd Hunt about the Orpheus Project's production of West Side Story. Lori Soa will be here to talk about the construction downtown, and Greg Cheney will give us the details about the CBJ's plans with Pedersen Hill. Doug Jones will preview his presentation on Wales, and Cherry Uckland will be here to talk about Read Across America. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here, live and local on a Juno afternoon, currently 32 degrees at the Juno International Airport.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A South Dakota House committee advances a bill removing the requirement for tribal leaders to register as lobbyists. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Jeremy Ludeman reports.
Senate Bill 74 changes a section of state law to allow presidents and council members from federally recognized tribes the same lobbyist exemption that city and county elected officials receive. Senator Troy Heinert of Mission sponsors the bill. He says there's a recent example supporting the change.
Last year we ran into an instance where we had called up elected tribal officials to come testify, and if they wanted to do that in their official capacity, they had to register as lobbyists. So this just exempts these elected officials, and we also limited it to just the nine tribes which are located in South Dakota.
No opponents testified against the bill. The House State Affairs Committee sends the measure to the full House chamber on a 12-0 vote. I'm Jeremy Ludeman.
A hearing on the Dakota Access Pipeline is scheduled today in federal court in Washington, D.C. The Standing Rock and Cheyenne River Sioux tribes are challenging the easement granted by the federal government for the pipeline to cross a waterway in North Dakota. The Cheyenne River Sioux tribe claims the easement threatens Lakota people's religious freedom because it allows the pipeline to run under sacred waters. The hearing is taking place days before oil could flow. In court documents filed Monday, Dakota Access LLC's construction status report states the pipeline will be completed and ready to flow oil anywhere between March 6th and April 1st. Meanwhile, the Standing Rock Sioux tribe is planning a march in Washington next Friday with various Native nations and allies. The Associated Press reports Acoma Pueblo tribal leaders and officials with Bright Green Group of companies are planning to meet today at a site in New Mexico where they hope to build a medical plant facility. According to a company press release, a 25-year business and land lease agreement with the tribe was signed earlier this year. Company officials say the facility on Acoma's reservation could grow up to 40 million plants per year, including cannabis. Officials hope to begin development in March. In Canada, some First Nations are welcoming a call from a conservation group to further restrict moose hunting across Ontario by banning the hunting of young moose. As we hear from Dan Karpinchuk, it comes in the wake of a report about the moose population in decline.
Ontario has been studying the issue after the Environmental Commissioner warned in the fall that the moose population had dropped 20% in 10 years. In some regions, that decline has been as sharp as 50 or even 60%. There are many reasons. Commissioner Diane Sachs points to a loss of roadless areas, disease, hunting, and climate change. She said moose are cold-weather animals and don't do especially well in the heat. The call for a ban on hunting moose calves, those under 18 months, was made by the group Wildlands League. It says hunting the young moose is eliminating future breeders. Derek Fox is the deputy grand chief of the Anishinaabe Nation in northern Ontario. Fox, too, is concerned about the declining numbers.
If our people don't have access to moose meat, which has been in our diet for thousands of years, you know, it's just going to make them more sick. First Nations have an issue with high rate of diabetes and cancer, high blood pressure. A lot of it has to do to the food that we eat. We've been eating this food that's foreign to us for the past couple hundred years, and I believe that's a part of the issue with diabetes. So if the moose just suddenly disappears, for example, you know, that would have a huge effect on our diet.
Ontario's Ministry of Natural Resources has completed a second phase of its moose project, looking at the factors contributing to the decline and possible measures for a solution. The Wildlands League says it's pushing for the ban now because decisions are being considered on this year's hunting season. The group says it's not against hunting, it's just for healthy wildlife populations. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at RamonaFarms.com. Support by the Fred Jones Jr. Museum of Art at the University of Oklahoma. Photosynthesis, new photographs by Navajo Will Wilson, plus early works by Edward Curtis. Photosynthesis through April 2nd. Info at fjjma.ou.edu.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Tuesday, February 28th. It's about 6 minutes past the top of the hour. And joining me now in the studio is the crew from Orpheus Project's West Side Story, Haley Duran, Emily Kane, and Todd Hunt. Welcome to the studio, everyone.
Oh, thanks, Scott.
Good to be here.
All right. As many people know, it opened last weekend at JDHS in the auditorium, and it's going through this weekend, same place. A show on Friday at 7:30, a show at Friday and Saturday, both at 7:30. I heard last Friday was, well, the whole weekend was tremendous, but full house on Friday. Tell us about the weekend.
Yeah, it was a fantastic, actually we opened on Saturday. So
Saturday
was the, a really nice full house, and it was some sort of huge record for us, for Orpheus Project as far as attendance goes, because our house staff was completely overwhelmed. It was great. And hopefully we can get, volunteers, those volunteers to come back again.
In case somebody doesn't know the West Side Story, can one of you outline it for us, please?
Sure. West Side Story is based off of Romeo and Juliet, so if you're familiar with that story, it's an adaptation of that that tale of star-crossed lovers, and it follows Tony and Maria, Maria, a Puerto Rican girl, and Tony, a I think he's Polish,
but
male.
American
yeah. is what he's coined as, and their race, basically, is what is interfering with their love for one another. And so it's kind of a tale of racism. And, yeah.
It's also a tale of struggle for territory. So it features two gangs, the Jets and the Sharks. And it, I think, makes us look at what it is that we value and how important it is to belong and how easy it is to lose touch of what's really important. And I was just saying in the waiting room earlier that one of the antidotes and solutions to our society being torn apart by these petty differences, which really doesn't matter if you're black or white or gay or straight or a man or a woman, we're all people and we're here to fulfill ourselves and to explore our sovereignty, and being engaged in a wonderful artistic creation is one way to bring us all together. I wanted to say also that both the music and the choreography are quite complex, but they're rendered in a very accessible way. So partly because the cast is young, it's going to appeal to people who might normally not be thinking about going to the opera, like a younger set, because there's it's feisty and jazzy and it's snazzy and the costumes are fantastic and the music is fantastic, but it is quite sophisticated music and dance, so there's a broad appeal, I think, for many different audiences.
Okay.
Yeah, I've got to say, sort of on that, this is the largest piece that I've worked on with choreography, and I have been blown away at how complex the choreography is. Like, every rehearsal, my jaw was on the floor. It's like, they have to do that. And just all these, like, rhythmic subtleties that crop in, not just with the music, but with the dance, and the dance having cross rhythms with the music. It's unbelievable. It's just fantastic.
That's the voice of Todd Hunt, who is producing and conducting. Todd, you mentioned choreography. Haley, you're the choreography director, the choreographer. What, I'm sure you all were rehearsing for a long time. Did anything happen on Saturday or Sunday that you weren't expecting? You know, once it was on stage in front of that many people, did you have any realizations about the production or the performance? Any surprises?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. I mean, working with them on a day-to-day basis, I'm watching them kind of pull out their characters and explore the movement. But it's been mentioned, it was kind of complicated choreography, and I didn't have necessarily dominantly a cast with a large, robust dance background, but I believed that the movements would speak for themselves. They'd pull out the action of the character, because that was Jerome Robbins' intention with his movement. And that was my realization watching it, was there are the characters. There they are. Like, they were actually pulling out their action through the movement. And that was the goal, and so it kind of tied the story. Finally, the movement, I felt like, had a lineage that I could actually see it pull all together. In rehearsals, it's always so segmented, so it was fun.
How about for you, Emily?
Well, dress rehearsal was our 41st rehearsal, so we had 41 rehearsals, formal four-hour rehearsals. Mm-hmm. So a lot of work went into this production, and everybody really hung in there. Hardly anybody missed any of the rehearsals, because all of us were just completely galvanized by the project. And what came out for me on opening night was that, of course, we chunked it down, and the dance was very complex, and just even the scenes and getting the subtlety of the scenes. And so we rehearsed segments, of course, and it wasn't till really the very end that we actually put the whole sequence together and saw the whole story lay out, and it all of a sudden it dropped into place for everybody. Mm-hmm. So that was fantastic. You could palpably sense that everybody understood the entire arc of the storyline and where all the segments fit in. But it took us almost to the very end to get to that place where it was a complete show.
Sure, sure. How about for you, Todd? Did anything reveal itself to you over the weekend?
You know, I just have so much fun doing this piece. And this has been on my to-do or wish list, I guess I should say, for conducting for actually decades now, interesting to say. But it's just going through, straight through like that I have to say, too, is really eye-opening, and it's such a wonderfully constructed piece. At the very beginning, I was really worried about the length of it and having it drag and just, you know, be really dull, but we don't really have those problems. We did a few little cuts, but there's no major cuts at all. Actually, there's not a single note of music cut from the score, which is, you know, fairly rare, but we're doing every single one of them. There's very little dialogue cut as well. And still, the piece comes in, you know, shorter than the movie, I think.
Yeah.
This question goes out to all of you. Who do you think would enjoy coming to the show this weekend?
I think, you know, this is, you know, as producer for this, too, you know, looking at the demographic for what, you know, who we want to come. And it's like, well, it would be about everybody. Mm-hmm. You've got the people who were coming of age when this, you know, came out in the late 50s. So there's, you know, that generation, all the way, you know, through the generation of most of the people on stage that are in their 20s, and younger than that, because the music, I think, is so lively and the story is so timely timeless, actually, that it really has a super broad appeal. I mean, it's probably rated, you know, PG, I think. I mean, there's some racial tension that happens in there. There's some stylized fighting. There's not any, like, really awful violence, I don't think. So fairly young, I wouldn't even know what to say as far as a youngest age. But it's, a huge range. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Haley, what are you most proud of with this production?
I think this cast was one of those special groups of people. I mean, there's like 28 people in our actually acting and performing on stage, and then there's another
32
actually on stage as well.
Yeah, so 60 people on stage.
60 people on stage at all times. And it was just a special one of those, having been in so many productions, it's one of those casts that work really well together. And to see that all their effort and time kind of paid off for them is huge. So it makes me feel proud that I did my job for them.
How about you, Emily?
We've become a family. And one of my favorite parts is getting to hang out with these talented, enthusiastic, and energetic people that normally I wouldn't be spending this amount of time with this diverse group of people. That's one of the things that theater can bring to the participants and also to our community. And so to sort of echo what Todd said, I can't imagine a demographic that wouldn't enjoy this because there's really so much there's just the lights and the brightness and the costumes if mm-hmm. you just came for that. And then if you're a music aficionado at all, the music is fantastic. It's just superb music.
Okay. Speaking of music, we're going to go out with Tonight. Can you set this up for us, Todd?
Yeah, sure. So this Tonight is one of it is the kind of big production singing number and perhaps the most operatic of all of the things in there. So you've got the two gangs. You've got the Jets and the Sharks, and they're each by themselves, you know, talking about how the great they're going to do in this rumble that's coming up. And you've got Maria, who's singing, everybody is expressing what they are feeling at that moment in time. So you've got Anita, you've got Maria, you have Tony, you have the Jets and the Sharks and Riff, and everybody's doing what is in their head all at once, and it's really fantastic.
All right, we're about to hear Tonight. Haley Duran, Emily Kane, and Todd Hunt, thank you all so much for coming on the show. The West Side Story continues this weekend at the Juno Douglas High School in the auditorium on Friday and Saturday at 7:30. Anything else any of you want to add?
Yeah, tickets are available at the Jack and bookstores, or you can get them at the door. They're $2 more at the door. If you get them in advance, you get a little bit of a discount and save some of our house staff a little bit of work, too.
Don't miss it. Bring a friend.
Yeah, or a few.
Tonight, the Puerto Ricans grumble, fair fights, but if they start a rumble, we'll rumble them right. Si bien peleando, si te caes, tonight, we're gonna cut them down to size, tonight. Dijeron sin cuchillos, ayer, los Sharks y sus colmillos, los van a correr. Tonight, set up and jazz it up and have us above. They're gonna get up tonight, the more they dream it, I'm the harder they love. Well, they began it, so los culpables, and we're the ones with the momentum for us. Tonight.
Anita's gonna get her kicks tonight. We'll have a private little mix tonight. He'll walk in hot and tired, so what? Don't matter if he's tired, as long as he's hot.
Tonight won't be just any night. Tonight there will be no morning.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, February 28th. It's about 18 minutes past the top of the hour. And in the studio now is Lori Sawa. She is a project manager for CBJ. And we're going to be talking about the construction that's going to happening on South Franklin. Welcome to the show, Lori.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so you were just telling me this is a three-year plan, and we're just getting started here.
Yeah, this is a large project that's been in the works for a couple years. Started with a pretty intensive public process. Trying to gather input on what folks would like to see in the downtown of Juneau. Through that process, we identified a number of improvements that folks would like to see. Better lighting, our sidewalks are pretty crowded with obstructions. Unfortunately, we don't have a whole lot of space to widen them, so we're trying to make do with what we've got there. So based on all of the input that we received, we went into design. So what we're doing now is phase one of a three-year project. The project area is from Manila Square by the Red Dog Saloon up to the Front Street intersection along South Franklin Street. We won't get into that intersection with this phase of work, but that's the construction that we're trying to get started right now.
Okay. As people who drive or walk through that area, what can we expect? Are there going to be closures, things like that?
Yeah, so we're going to try to do the project with the least impact on pedestrian access and vehicular traffic as we can. We're also starting it very early in the season. We typically don't do construction in February, but we're going to try to be done before tourist season or as early in tourist season as possible. So what folks can expect is a road closure from the Red Dog to Ferry Way. For vehicular traffic, we will have pedestrian access throughout the entire construction area, throughout the entire project. Our plan right now is to do one side of the street at a time, so that one sidewalk will be clear for pedestrians during the whole project. And then for the businesses that are in the active construction zone, our contractor has pedestrian walkways, so like wooden bridges basically, that will provide access to storefronts.
All right, and give us the dates, the rough dates of when that will be closed to vehicles.
Well, we tried to start Monday,
okay.
But with the snow in the forecast, the contractor wanted to hold off a bit to allow for the heavy snowfall, which didn't actually happen today, but it sounds like we're going to get some snow tonight and then some pretty cold temperatures through the weekend. So keep an eye out. We're going to try again in the morning. If snow starts, then it'll probably be next week before we get started with that. But the road will be closed sometime here soon.
To cars, but pedestrians, okay, and
yes.
Businesses will be open and
yes.
Accessible.
Yes, they will.
If people want more information, Lori, where should they go?
We have a number of places for folks to get more information. We have a website. It's pretty long, but I'll go ahead and give it to you. It's www.juno.org, Engineering, Franklin, and Front Street. We also have a Facebook page, CBJ does, and Lisa Fu's working with us now, and she's been great at pushing information out on our Facebook page. There aren't a whole lot of people who have liked our page, so if you want some updates, that's a great place to get them. We also have a Twitter site, and every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m., I'm going to provide construction updates at the Heritage Cafe on Front Street. This morning was my first meeting, and it was good. We didn't have a whole lot of folks show up. We're pretty early in the season, but we still had maybe 6 or 8 people show up, and we were able to give them an update and let them know what we're thinking. They were able to ask questions and talk with me and the contractor as well.
Can you give us, before we go, a few highlights of what we can expect after these 3 years? What might that street look like?
Yeah, sure. I'm pretty excited about it. I think it's going to be a great improvement. If you walk down South Franklin Street right now and you're really paying attention, the sidewalks are pretty degraded. And, you know, our light fixtures, a lot of people have sentimental attachment to them, but they're pretty old and they don't give off a lot of light. And so lack of lighting is a big concern. I think lighting is probably going to be the most visible improvement there. On the mountainside of the street, we're putting new light poles up. There'll be efficient LED fixtures. And on the water side of the street, the sidewalk is a bit narrower on that side, so in order to open that sidewalk up a little bit, we're not going to put light poles back up. We're going to do under canopy strip lighting to provide lighting for the sidewalk and the street.
Okay, it sounds great. Lori, remind me again when that meeting is at Heritage, when people can come talk to you?
Every Tuesday at 9 a.m.
And I bet they can find you at CBJ as well?
Yes, they can.
And on your Facebook page?
Yep.
Thank you so much for coming in. Lori, anything else you want to add?
Oh, nope. Thanks for having me.
All right. Anytime.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends. And I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again. places that I've never been, seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road again, on the road again.
Delighted to honor four women whose contributions have enhanced the lives of women and children in Juneau. On March 4th at Centennial Hall, AWARE will host their 21st Women of Distinction Gala, honoring Andrea Caesar, Sue Douglas, Chris Sell, and Rena Sims. Doors open at 5:30 with a silent auction, no host bar, and music by Tom Loker. Tickets at AWARE, 586-6623, or online at thejahc.org.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Tuesday, February 28th, about 30 minutes past the top of the hour. In the studio now is Greg Chaney. He is the Lands and Resources Manager for the city, and we are going to talk about the plans for Pedersen Hill and the meeting tonight. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah, it's been a long process. Tonight we're having a preliminary plat hearing at the Planning Commission, which is actually where it's a pretty big milestone for the project, because the Planning Commission is the body that makes the determination as to whether the project is appropriate and if it meets the criteria or the current regulations. So, and they'll also be making a recommendation to the Assembly about if it's an appropriate city project. So the Assembly is the one that actually makes the final decisions, but the Planning Commission will be determining if it meets the code requirements.
Okay, so the Pedersen or Pedersen, talked about
the
name.
Yeah, I actually called up the family to see how they preferred to have it pronounced, and what I understood was most people say Pedersen with kind of a T sound, but it's spelled with a D, so every once in a while someone will say Pedersen if they want to really be clear on, because there's a place called Pedersen Creek over in Douglas, that's with a T, it's a different spelling, and so anyway, I think it's okay either way. I often say Pedersen, but every once in a while I'll say Pedersen if I'm trying to be real clear.
And describe for our listeners where this neighborhood might be if this goes through.
Yeah, okay. It's located on Sherwood Lane, which is opposite, and it's located opposite Sherwood Lane, which is where DMV is located. It's kind of downhill from Swampy Acres past Wild Meadow Lane. And it'll be at the base of the hill there. So if you're driving out to the university across Brotherhood Bridge, it would be on your right-hand side.
Okay, and 86 lots?
Yeah, that's 86 residential lots is our goal right now. When you go into preliminary plat hearing, you make a proposal and the Planning Commission reviews it. And they could actually change the number of lots based on a whole lot of different factors. But right now it would be 86 home sites.
And these are moderately priced homes for Juneau, is that right?
Well, not exactly. I can't say what the prices of the homes is going to be because the city is not building the housing. We're just making lots available. But the lots we've designed, it's a D10, which is 10 units per acre subdivision. So the lots are rather small. They're very similar to what's in downtown Douglas or downtown Juneau, you know, what we call the flats. And so those lots are tend to be a little bit smaller, so that tends to make the houses that would fit on them a little smaller. And our goal is to provide entry-level rung in the ladder of home ownership. And we would like to see basically a lot of starter homes in this area, but I've also talked to a lot of retirees that are talking about downsizing their empty nesters. They have a four-bedroom home, and they're there by themselves. They don't really need it anymore. And they think, wow, you know, if I could have a small south-facing lot kind of centrally located in the valley, that sounds like pretty enticing. So we might get some of those folks as well.
Has the city done this before?
Well, we've done similar types of things, but not exactly this thing. You know, we had a pretty big development out at Lena Point. That was over 40 lots, and those were all residential. But the lots were bigger, and it was more geared towards a higher-end type of housing. The development costs on those lots would be a lot higher, though, because they had on-lot wastewater disposal, so you had to do a lot of lot prep. Here, we're going to be providing water, sewer, sidewalks on both sides, so it'll be more of a, you know, residential neighborhood feel.
Okay. Before we went on the air, you said there are strong feelings on both sides of this, right?
Yeah, there's very strong feelings. For one thing, the very limited supply of vacant lots right now for construction. So if you're interested in building your own home, you really don't have much choice, especially if you're looking at a smaller lot sort of at the kind of entry level end of the spectrum. There just aren't that many available. But on the other hand, people in the private sector who own land, who are in the land development or subdivision business, that's their livelihood. A lot of them feel like this is unfair competition by the city. So, and I can understand both sides, but as lands manager, I've been giving the charge of the city is one of the largest landholders in town. Unfortunately, most of our land isn't very easy to develop. It's behind a row of houses or something, so we don't have access. And the first step we had in this project was to trade land to get access to the property. And now that we have it, we're going to break it up into small parcels and build a little neighborhood and distribute those lots however the assembly decides to do that. But my main point is I think it's an appropriate thing for the city to get our property into private hands. And in this case, we're trying to help out that entry-level home ownership group, which there aren't very many options for right now.
Okay. If you have opinions either way, you can testify tonight to the Planning Commission. What time does that meeting start and where is it?
It starts at 7 p.m. and it's in the Assembly Chambers downtown. And anybody can testify, and we're encouraging people to come by and share your views on this.
Okay.
And I also want to say, on the city's website, if you go there under Hot Topics, there are two bullet points that have to do with this. So if you want to look at what the subdivision looks like and all that sort of thing, that's where you can find out more information.
Okay, Greg, again, that meeting is at 7 p.m. tonight in the Assembly Chambers, and you can give your opinion on the Peterson Hill possible subdivision.
Yes.
Okay. Greg, thank you for coming on the show.
Well,
is there anything?
Thank you for having me. It's always great to be here.
Yeah, anything else you want to add?
No, just hoping for a nice turnout tonight.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 28th of February, 2017. It's the birthday of the novelist Colin McCann, born in Dublin, 1965. His book, Let the Great World Spin, came out in 2009. Grew up in suburban Dublin, middle class, house full of books, majored in journalism. Came to the United States at 21, wanted to write a novel. He hopped on a 15-speed Schwinn and rode it around the country, 12,000 miles, through 40 states, collecting stories all along the way. Colin McCann, who said he's had a happy life, so it doesn't make for an interesting story, he said, for me, the logical conclusion is that I have to write about outside my life. So he said every time he writes a book, I take a brand new 3-year crash course in that which I want to know. To research one novel, he lived with homeless people in subway tunnels. For another, he went to Russia. For one, he looked at maps in the New York Public Library, then went off to Eastern Europe to wander through the gypsy camps. His epic, Let the Great World Spin, set in the 1970s, weaving the stories of a dozen New York protagonists, including prostitutes, a young radical Irish monk, a Park Avenue mother in mourning for her son killed in Vietnam. A story that begins with the image of the tightrope walker high in the air, walking the wire between the World Trade Towers. To get the voice of his protagonist, Tilly, a 38-year-old grandmother, longtime prostitute, McCann did a lot of research, tried talking with women on the street. He shadowed police detectives around the Bronx, looked through rap sheets, trying to figure out which crime she might have committed, read the memoir of a pimp. He was trying to get the tone of her voice. And then one night, a line came floating to him, which went, "The skinniest dog I ever seen is the one on the side of the Greyhound buses." And he recognized that as the voice that he was trying to channel. He wrote all night, he said, and wound up with 6 pages, a monologue by Tilly, in which she said, "They didn't let me go to Corrigan's funeral. I would have walked the bakery line to get there. They put me back in the pen instead. I weren't crying. I laid straight out on the bench with my hand over my eyes. I saw my rap sheet. It's yellow with 54 entries, typed up, not so neat. You see your life with carbon copies kept in a file, Hunts Point, Lex and 49th, West Side Highway, all the way back to Cleveland." Colin McCann said, "I think a good novel can be a doorstep to despair. I also think the real bravery comes with those who prepare to go through that door and look at the world in all its grime and torment and still find something of value, no matter how small." Here's a poem for today by Jane Hirschfield, "A Small-Sized Mystery." Leave a door open long enough, a cat will enter. Leave food, it will stay. Soon, on cold nights, you'll be saying, "Excuse me," if you want to get out of your chair. But one thing you'll never hear from a cat is, "Excuse me," nor Einstein's famous theorem, nor "the quality of mercy is not strained." In the dictionary of cat, mercy is missing. In this world where much is missing, a cat fills only a cat-sized hole. Yet your whole body turns toward it again and again because it is there. A Small-Sized Mystery, a poem by Jane Hirschfield, from Come Thief, collection from Alfred A. Knopf, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, brain training with over 50 challenging games from scientists working with university researchers to push cognitive research forward. Learn more at lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You're listening to a Juno afternoon here on Tuesday, February 28th. It's about 20 minutes until the top of the hour. And in the studio with me now is Terry Eklund. She's a first grade teacher at Harborview Elementary School. And we're going to be talking about Read Across America. Welcome to the show, Terry.
Well, thank you for having us.
It's nice to have you here. So what is Read Across America?
So Read Across America is a day to celebrate reading. It was started by the NEA, National Education Association, in 1997 and has been going on ever since. The actual Read Across America Day is March 2nd, but here in Juneau, March 2nd is Dr. Seuss's birthday. And here in Juneau, we're celebrating on March 4th at the Mendenhall Public Library from 10 o'clock till noon. And it's just an event for the whole family. Family, kids of all ages are welcome and invited with parents and aunties and uncles. We'll have guest readers. We'll have crafts for kids to do. There'll be face painting. We have lots of entertainment signed up. We'll have the Gastineau Harborview Strummers. Brett Dillingham is going to be doing some storytelling. We have Clinkit Dance Group coming in.
So there's all kinds of events, things going on all during the morning. And then the big thing that most kids get excited about is you get a piece of cake to celebrate because it's Dr. Seuss's birthday we're celebrating.
And is it sort of a celebration of reading and books as well?
It is. JEA, the Juno Education Association, we do this because research strongly shows that kids that read do better in school. And we think it's important enough to have a day set aside to really celebrate reading and encourage reading. We're holding it at the Mendenhall Valley Public Library. It's a great time for people if they haven't been out to the new library. It's a beautiful facility, and we partner with the city librarians are helping plan this and will be available. There'll be reading. The JDHS boys basketball team every year volunteers to come in and read to kids, which kids love looking up to their sports heroes and hearing them read, as well as we invite important community members to come in and read to the kids as well. So, and every child who attends will get a free book when they leave.
So, oh, excellent.
Yeah, it's a...
So you're a first grade teacher. I know you've taught many other grades as well, but where are first graders on average with their reading ability?
Well, you know, this is an exciting time of year because the world's just opening up to a lot of first graders. They're reading a lot of Dr. Seuss books. They're just now getting into, you know, Green Eggs and Ham and Cat in a Hat. And so they're starting to move from having to read kind of written just for them books to the whole world of books opening up to them. It's a great time to get kids excited about reading. And it's nice to have older brothers and sisters. Kids at this age still need to be read to. Everybody loves to be read to. So we want to encourage parents to get involved with reading their children as well.
It sounds like you read Dr. Seuss in
your
classroom.
I love Dr. Seuss.
What do you love about Dr. Seuss? Why is he such a celebrated writer?
Well, you know, he played with words. I think he had fun with his reading. A lot of his books have a message to them. But I remember as a child being able to read Green Eggs and Ham. And it's the first book I really remember checking out of the library and just kind of having that aha moment. I can read. And I read it over and over, and it has some silliness to it. He plays with his characters. And I think there's a character that everybody can relate to in Dr. Seuss. So I think he originally started writing books as a challenge. He thought that the books that were being produced for young readers were boring, and he thought he could write a whole book with you just using 100 words, and that was the first book, and and it took off from there. So he's a pretty amazing guy.
Okay, so help celebrate that children's literature and books and the young readers in our community. It's this Saturday from 10 to noon at the Mendenhall Valley Public Library. Sounds like a lot of fun. What can our listeners do to help? Should they just come? Is there anything they can do?
Nope, just come and spread the word. Tell your neighbors, invite a friend to come with you. Just spread the word. We hope that we have, we'd love to have 1,000 people come through or more. Let's support our young readers in this community.
And a free book for all who attend. Right?
All.
10 to noon this Saturday at the Mendenhall Valley Public Library. Cherry Eklund, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Support for KTO comes from Martha's Flowers, hosting a wedding vendor showcase at the Airport Mall on Saturday, March 4th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. and on Sunday, March 5th from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m. Information at 789-0760 or at alaskanflowers.com.
This is Bird Note. Ah, the sweet music of gulls. Okay, we have to admit it. For some of us, it's just hard to get excited about gulls. But in their own way, gulls are as fascinating and have as much to tell us as other birds. Take the herring gull, for example. Along the Atlantic coast of North America, the nesting population of herring gulls numbers in the hundreds of thousands. Abundant, yes, and striking in appearance. Adults have pale gray backs and wings, pink legs, and wingtips neatly tipped in black. They stare back at you with piercing, pale yellow eyes. We take their abundance for granted, but as recently as 1900, feather and egg hunters had wiped out virtually all nesting herring gulls south of Maine, where only about 8,000 pairs remained. Conservation laws have enabled the gulls to recover, but even now, herring gulls remain vulnerable to ecological damage and changes. Overfishing and closure of landfills reduces food supply, and because they're at the top of the aquatic food chain, their diet concentrates chemical pollutants such as dioxins. So the next time you see a herring gull, take a careful look and listen to that unforgettable voice.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon. It's 15 minutes until the top of the hour.
I saw you there, that's when I knew that I was born to be with you.
When good love shines, I feel it too. Take me with you, take me with you.
So I built a boat to sail. I swear I'll never fail you.
Oh, we'll sail into the sun. Take my hand and run into the sea of love.
Listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, February 28th. We have about 10 minutes until the top of the hour. And in the studio now is Patricia Weary, and she's part of the Alaska Wildlife Alliance Southeast Chapter, and here to let us know about Doug Jones's presentation on whales tomorrow night, Wednesday, at the Valley Public Library. Welcome to the show, Patricia.
Hi.
Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
If people don't know what the Alaska Wildlife Alliance is all about, tell us a little bit about it.
So it's an organization, probably been around
10, 15, 20 years. And they are looking at critters in Alaska, the habitat probably, and other things that make them viable from now into the future for a big range of people's use. And for myself, I consider them intrinsically valuable, but they're not. It's not just hunting. It's also not against hunting, but it's the whole range of reasons to care about diversity of life.
Okay, and tell us about the Southeast chapter, about how many of you are there.
Well, we got a big chapter, and we got a very small board. There's only four of us on the board, and we started doing the educational piece, this Wildlife Wednesdays, and I do about five, six of those in the wintertime. And a lot of interesting people in Juneau. We pulled so many scientists from Fish and Wildlife and NOAA and artists and photographers. It's really fun to put together one of these seasonal pieces. And Doug is on his second life. He's a naturalist now, works summer times on the Disney ship, Princess Cruise ship. So he is always needing to learn and learn more and deal with the public and answering questions. His stock of knowledge is just growing and growing, and he's interested in humpback whales. He sees those along the whole route that the Disney boat makes. And I like it that he's gotten to a point where he appreciates that creatures are more than a lot of people give him credit for. And he's going to talk about, I'll say, the smarts of humpback whales. Is good. Is that him over my shoulder?
No, that was, yeah. No.
Okay.
Okay, you know, I actually heard a rumor that there's still a couple humpbacks hanging out in our neighborhood.
Yeah, it's been a while, but they, and I don't know if it's a younger one or what it is, that's out there in Aka Bay because there are herring in there. And that's why all those seals and sea lions are in there and why that humpback came into there. But they're seeing it from some of the buildings up high. They've seen it for a number of months now.
Okay. So this Doug will be talking about humpback whales tomorrow night at the Valley Public Library from 7 to 8 as part of Wildlife Wednesdays. Sounds interesting. It's free, I imagine?
Free? Mm-hmm. We even offer free cookies.
That's great. So I wanted to ask you earlier, mm-hmm. What is your favorite critter in Southeast Alaska?
Oh, I don't have one. I like the one
favorites
that I'm looking at and trying to learn more about one at a time. I don't have just one.
Yeah. All right. Patricia Wary, thanks for coming on the show. Again, Doug Jones will be speaking about humpback whales. Do you think he'll get into killer whales, or is he going to focus on humpbacks?
I think he's sticking with the humpback whales.
Okay.
It's about a 50-minute presentation that he does, lots of slides, and his slides are looking better all the time.
Great. Tomorrow, Wednesday, at the Valley Public Library from 7 to 8. Thanks for coming on the show, Patricia.
You're welcome.
Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon. Tomorrow on the show, we'll learn about Toastmasters and the spring contest with guest Jim Ramiel. We had a preview of Aware's Women of Distinction. And we'll talk with undercover journalist Suki Kim, the Wednesday night speaker for the Juno World Affairs Council. And artist M.K. McNaughton will be on the show to highlight her first Friday exhibit. And let's take a look at the weather here. It's currently 32 degrees at the Juneau International Airport. And we still do have a winter storm warning in effect. And the forecast for tonight calls for snow with a low around 22. East winds to 10 miles per hour. And the chance of precip is 100%. And new snow accumulation of 1 to 3 inches possible. Going into tomorrow, the forecast calls for snow with highs around 28. Southeast winds 20 to 25, so increasing. Chance of precip is again 100% and 4 to 6 inches possible tomorrow. And then Thursday calls for more snow, likely after 3 p.m. Cloudy with high near 29. Southeast wind around 30 miles per hour, starting to blow some more going into Thursday. Chance of precip 60% on Thursday. Thanks again for tuning in to Juno Afternoon.